Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. Episode 3, Season 12. Now, we've had one episode where we've all been together. We had DJ Ryan Champion, of course, out spinning the wheels of steel. He came back last week and now Jack Bennion's buggered off somewhere. He did say last week that he may or may not be here. He's playing hard to get, but me and Ryan are in. Hello, Ryan.
Hello.
It's just me and you, mate. Just me and you.
It is. Apparently Jack Bennion's gone to somewhere where there's more hairstylists.
I'm just jealous if he's going to see hairstylists these days, mate, to be honest with you. But yeah, there you go. Do you know what? The irony is, of course, is that there's two things that I wanted to talk to him about this week. Again, we're going to be a little bit UK-centric at the top of the podcast because we've got loads of international stuff coming up a bit later on. But there's been two pieces that he's wrote this week, which I really wanted to talk to him about. And the irony is he's not here. Now, the first thing I wanted to mention, right, was obviously David Richards is now the boss. He's head of the MSA. And the big news that happened here a couple of years ago after the incidents that unfortunately happened is that our seeding was changed. That now appears to have been reversed from July 1, whereas the low-powered front-wheel drive cars now can now return to the front of the field, which Jack texted me to say this is what's going to happen. And I think you got the same text as well. I think we were in the group text. And I'm just a little bit concerned that is it a little bit too late?
I see what you're saying because it's been a while and not just the low powered front wheel drive cars. Obviously the elder of the historic cars as well. You know, we've seen a lot of the early 2 liter 911s, the Lotus Cortinas, the Minis have all disappeared. Historic Minis, I mean, they've all disappeared from gravel rallying because they quite rightly didn't want to run their expensive cars behind four-wheel drive cars and on rough stages. So there's a few different classes that it does directly affect. I don't know, let's hope it does see an increase in entries from those kind of cars and, you know, we get back to somewhere where we were before because we had a reasonable system before where, they, like you said, the lower-powered cars or the older cars were running on smoother roads and the four-wheel drive cars, it's less of an issue. So I don't know. I guess time will tell in answering your question, but it's got to be a step in the right direction anyway.
I think I think you missed this out, but certainly during my time of rallying that over here in BTRDA, the National Gravel Championship, the 1400s ran at the front of the field and we had some epic battles. You know, we've got Matt Edwards who won the opening round of the BRC last week. He was kind of part of that kind of generation and we had David Bogie there and, you know, we had so many young drivers who had these mega quick 1400 cars and it was kind of like you went there, you proved yourself there and then you moved on to the next thing. And when we lost that, there was a kind of lack of direction almost because, you know, even during that period, we still had one make championships as well. And of course, we kind of find ourselves with this where the people start now. And, you know, people were, you know, well, most people started in 1400s. That kind of rung was almost taken away. And, you know, there's some that have gone directly into BRC now in the cadets section. We spoke to Ian Campbell, of course, about that last week, which is a strong category. But, you know, back in the heyday of 1400s and BTRDA, we had kind of 20 cars, 30 cars at the real sharp end of the field going toe-to-toe.
Yeah, and like you said, it was a good way into the sport because there was the rally first category as well in that section. So you had relatively standard front wheel drive cars right through to what the crazy 200 horsepower Novas at the front of it, and it was a good grounding, like you said. And then people moved on to that to BRC, but we're seeing people fast tracking the system nowadays, aren't we? You know, in the past, you would have done BTRDA, you would have done BRC, then if you're in that position, you go on to WRC, whereas, you know, we're going to be talking to Gus Greensmith in a little while, you know, a brief spell in BRC and then straight to WRC because you've got these one-make championships in WRC now that are attracting the series competitors. So, yeah, the world's changed a little bit. We've lost another rally this week, which isn't great at all. So we're losing rallies from the calendar. But let's hope that makes bigger, stronger entries on the rallies that do run.
Well, that's, again, you know, it's controversial, but, you know, are we a nation? Are we a country? And I'm sure this goes on around the world. You know, I'm going to talk about APRC a little bit later on. Four registered cars on APRC last weekend. That's staggering. I can't believe that an FIA championship, you know, is at that level. But are we at the stage now where it is the survival of the fittest across the board in rallying? And again, we can roll this out across the world. Are there events now that perhaps need to make way, as much as it's painful for it to happen, in order for the greater good?
I think we've mentioned this in the past, that there has been, you know, a lot of events out there. There's been a clash of championships, a clash of rallies, and certainly in this country there was an awful lot of gravel rallies out there competing for the same customers at the end of the day. So it's definitely a tough time, but let's hope this seeding restructure helps encourage a few people back into the forest. I'm sure a lot of these cars are still just sat there. People haven't sold them. So let's hope it encourages people back out. And like you say, maybe on a world scale, it's a similar situation. Although I think APRC, you know, when you watch the TV program and you see some of the Japanese drivers that have finished fourth or fifth in certain rounds, and no disrespect to them, but I think, again, it's because there has been a relatively limited field over the years. It's just that they make a reasonable TV program out of the maximum of maybe 8 or 10 cars that have been there.
And that has been massively, you know, kind of undone now, of course, you know, the MRF now have kind of redirected their budget with Garvu Gill, of course, who's been a stalwart, along with, you know, Skoda Motorsports sending their young drivers, of course, Pontus Tiedemann and VB have all been out there recently. That's now changed, and, you know, they're now going WRC2, albeit not registering for the championship. And there was a little bit of a grey area of when the press release came out last week, of how it was going to work. They're going to go to the events and, do the events on MRF tyres and then see where they are as a bit of R&D for both driver and that's indeed the tyre manufacturer. I believe they are going to be running an M Sport car, or an M Sport going to be running the car for them. But where I'm going with this is you pulled MRF out of that, and of course, you know, a few years ago Proton were there, of course, with the Super 2 cars. They pulled out of that. You're left with a very, very shallow championship, and you know, I don't know what the answers are. You know, logistically, again, having worked in the championship, it's a very, very expensive championship to do right, and that's the problem.
Yeah, absolutely, because the areas it covers, like you said, logistically, it's a huge challenge, and you've got some drivers that tend to focus on the rallies in their area, but there's very few that have the budget that MRF had to go and do the full championship.
Now, a couple of things I wanted to mention. Obviously, ironically, we've just been talking about APRC. Hayden Padden was out on which is also going to be coming up a little bit later on with our roving reporter Gary Boyd, of course, who's been contributing quite a bit this season to the podcast. I don't know, he wasn't ringing Ryan there, by the way. I have no idea who was ringing Ryan, but we've got Hayden coming up a little bit later on, who just won that particular round, the Rally Wilhagi. I probably pronounced it wrong. I probably massively pronounced it wrong, but he won it by 7.5 minutes. But he's kept Max Fipp right. He's ready to go. He's back for Portugal, and Seb Marshall's been reunited with him as well. And I just hope we get the Hayden of old. You know, this layoff hasn't, you know, dented too much into his confidence.
Yeah, firstly, that was technology being too clever for its own good, because I was ignoring a call on my telephone, which obviously then transferred to my laptop, didn't it? Like you said, great that Hayden has, well, two things really. I mean, he's done an awful lot for motorsport in New Zealand, and you know, he's worked really hard at getting that Hyundai program up and running, at helping young drivers, and in some ways I guess he's got a little bit of payback from that, because whilst he's on a limited program this year, he's been able to benefit from some extra seat time, which will definitely help to keep him sharp. You know, New Zealand has always been respected for having some of the best roads in the world. We've heard a lot of times about them wanting to get back into WRC. I mean, certainly he's driving on incredible gravel stages, so it's certainly not going to do him any harm. Having said that, it is a little bit different to a latest spec WRC car. But it should still add to his confidence or build his confidence. And like you said, let's just hope that Hayden has a good remainder of the year and can make the most of the rounds that he's got, because we've seen Danny Sordo do a very, very solid job on the rallies that he's done. So, you know, not only do we want to see Hayden do it for himself, but he needs to do it for his career to stand a good chance of a full-time driver again next year.
Do we dare speculate this season on what next season's lineups will look like? Do we even dare to start speculating on that one?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit early, isn't it?
Yeah.
Certainly from a Hyundai point of view, I mean, they'll be keen to see how Hayden gets on and how it all pans out through the year. You know, Danny, like I said, Danny's done a great job, and you know, let's not forget, people think Danny's been around forever, but Chris Meek and Danny Sordo were competitors in JWRC. It's just Danny got his break and has been in WRC ever since, whereas Chris has obviously struggled to get that full-time program. But Danny still seems to have the hunger to drive, so I guess we'll have to see what happens over the remainder of the year.
Absolutely. I wanted to take us to ERC. We didn't do too much about it last week. I was, you know, we were hoping to be doing something with Chris Ingram, to be honest with you. Unfortunately, we there was a video that went out last week. Rye, I think you've seen. I think you retweeted. Unfortunately, he had a testing incident. Then there was TalkSport who put the car back together, and it was an amazing job and everything else. And then we got reports of Chris, unfortunately, being ill, and he was in hospital the night before the rally, and then he discharged himself and only managed three stages of the rally, Ryan. We've passed on our best, and hopefully Chris will be back fighting fit soon. But it left, the rally a little bit of a sour taste, really, because I think, you know, Chris certainly on his previous exploits in the Skoda R5, I think probably would have been mixing it. You know, you're obviously lucky enough there, kind of dominating as well, but it would have been nice to have a little bit of one of our own fight in there to give us that British interest.
Yeah, I'm sure Chris would have been keen, because he's had some very good results on tarmac before. He built up a little bit of experience in the R5 car, albeit, you know, on gravel, but a shame that he didn't do the rally, but yeah, definitely send him our best wishes. Let's hope he recovers quickly and that he can get on with his program, because you know, it's going to be interesting to see. He needs to get mileage in the car. He needs to get mileage in an R5, and then we'll see what he can do. We mentioned Gus already. You know, Gus Greensmith's building his experience in R5 in WRC2, and he's starting to reap the rewards of that. And let's hope that Chris can do the same in ERC a little bit later on in the year.
Fingers crossed. We're gonna have some guys maybe join us. Maybe Chris Rawls will join us in the next week or so to talk a little bit more about ERC and what's going on. The coverage is fantastic, by the way. You know, they've still got Rally Radio. Obviously, it's a Eurosport Championship, so the coverage is still there as well. So please, folks, seek it out, because, you know, again, it's a good leaderboard. You know, it's not like, you know, obviously lucky enough, we know obviously always dominates it, but you know, you've got Fabian Kramer and you know, twice German champion. I remember him really, really threatening in WRC2 a few years ago, I think it was, and Bruno Magalhães and people like that. And also the Hyundai R5 now starting to come into its own a little bit, right? Which we all need. You know, I think we spoke about it last week. Obviously, we've now got one, supposedly, that's going to be running regular in the British Rally Championship, which is being supported by the Hyundai customer program, of course, with Keith Cronin. But I suppose it's nice to just see another R5 shape, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, it is. It is. And yes, like you said, we touched on it with Keith. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? There seems to be a couple of R5 cars that have worked instantly. Obviously, the Fiestas work well, and no two ways about it. The Skoda's been very good from the start, whereas we've seen Peugeot and Citroen struggle with their R5 cars, and it's taken a little bit of time for Hyundai to get their car right. So it's... Yeah, quite interesting that some of the R5 cars, the development program just seems very straightforward. They come to the rallies, bang, they're on the pace straight away. And some of the other cars, they're needing to put a little bit more work into.
So, and then this isn't, I'm not trying to put words into your mouth or whatever. This is just an observation from the outside. You know, I was very fortunate this week I had lunch with young Tom Williams and David Williams. And of course, we all know David's background and stuff. And it was interesting talking to Tom, because Tom was out working, for John Hoglund over a period of time at the beginning of the season, and Skoda were over there testing, and they were basically flying in their young drivers to literally just put kilometres on a car. Just, you know, basically they were allocated, they had to put 300Ks, 400Ks on the car, and then they flew home, and then somebody else flew in to keep doing it. Just literally just time and time and time and time and time and time and time in the car of just battering out kilometres. Now, you know, Skoda, we know, are the probably the front-running car to be in, certainly at the moment, R5. But does the test drivers as well, right, that must make a massive difference as well. Who's actually testing these cars?
Yeah, I guess who's testing it? And like you said, just the amount of kilometres it does. And that's why certainly, you know, you said the Skoda's very strong. I mean, it'll be interesting to see the Volkswagen Polo when that is finally introduced. We heard this week that they've delayed the debut of that car. It was originally going to be Rally Deutschland, and now it's been delayed. But I mean, the testing that's gone on with that car is just immense. You know, their test program, I think they're testing literally every 2 weeks in a different venue throughout the year. And they've been following most of the WRC rallies, testing on familiar testing stages or familiar rally stages. You know, and they've had the likes of Marcus Grönholm, they've had Petter Solberg in the car, as well as the current Skoda drivers. So that, you know, they're definitely leaving no stone unturned, and you'd expect that to be a strong player when it was introduced. Having said that, you would with Hyundai, but Hyundai did for the first time set up a customer program, really, a customer team to oversee the development of the R5 Hyundai, and maybe that's just taking a little bit of time to gel.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Obviously, the car that Keith Cronin used is the car that Eugene Donnelly has got for the Irish Tarmac Championship. Of course, Genie coming back to do the Irish Tarmac round. And again, you look at the Irish Tarmac series. I know we have a lot of listeners over in Ireland, and I would like to get more involved in is doing bits and pieces on the Irish Tarmac. But you know, it's good to see. You know, it's such a dominating championship now for Fiestas, right? It kind of look, you look at the results from the weekend. I don't know whether you've seen the results from Killarney, but if you went back 20 years, I think every car would be a Subaru, bar about two. And it's one of those, you look at the top 10, and in the top 10, there is, seven Fiesta R5s. So it's kind of like, that is the car that everyone's going with, bar the one that, you know, bar Eugene Donnelly's car. And again, it just seeing that different shape out. And I'm really excited because I think R5 is the future of the sport. I really do. I really think R5 is the future. And I think it's the only way it's sustainable, which is what I wanted to talk to you about now. Right. Jack Benyon's wrote a piece this week in Motorsport News. And again, it was quite interesting because we had Ian Campbell on last week. And, you know, I can be quite hard on the BRC at times. And, you know, I think you can. I think Jack can. But Jack wrote a piece this week's MN with regards to, you know, are we at a juncture with the British Rally Championship? Is it sustainable where it is with, you know, the lowest number of R5 cars since it came back in 2016? The juniors are strong, you know, and the cadets are strong, but the R5 car, is it too expensive? And I think we know the answer to that, but, you know, what is the answer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could obviously have quite a long debate on what we do with BRC. And we had this very same discussion, you know, a couple of months back, that the championship has got to be a stepping stone. That's their aim, is a stepping stone for young drivers to develop, rather than a championship for, let's say, the wealthy amateur. It's got to be an aspirational championship. And if it was two-wheel drive, then as they've tried in the past, that didn't work either. So it is a very tricky one. The R5 car, as you said, is working very, very well across the board in other countries, in European Championship, in WRC2. But we're struggling in BRC to get the entries. And I think, unfortunately, it just reflects the current lack of standing of rallying in sports in the UK. And we just can't attract the level of backing needed to run one of these cars. And, you know, unless you're in a fortunate position to fund it or have sponsors that can fund it that are linked personally to you, we're not seeing much in the way of commercial sponsorship from these cars in the BRC.
Can I ask a question? You know, you were around it. Is, you know, I had a conversation with somebody about this the other day, and again, we're all guilty of this. Rally fans across the world, whether it's WRC, whether it's APRC, ERC, whatever it may be, we all wear the rosy-coloured spectacles. And I challenged somebody on this that the only time when the BRC was actually any good and competitive across the board was F2. And the reason why I say that, right, is because of the works teams. And then outside of that, it's always been pretty much 10 strong cars at best.
Yeah, it probably has. And probably it was no different even in the F2 cars. Even in the F2 days, you know, you probably only had actually 10 strong cars in it. But obviously when you had manufacturers spending the amount of money that they were, that was generating a huge profile. They were all pushing their marketing budgets towards it. They were bringing tire companies, oil companies, stereo companies at the time that would all back the program. And yeah, as soon as you lose the manufacturers, then you lose a lot of the funding sources. But I think we're certainly seeing times where BRC has been very, very competitive other than that. Even back in the Group N days, the depth of driver you had was obviously Mark Higgins, Gwyndaf Evans, but you had Tapio Laukkanen come back, you had Alistair McRae come back, you had David Higgins in there as well, on and off, Rory Gallagher. You know, there was a big bunch of names. And the F2 days are the high profile because of they were exciting cars and there was huge money being thrown behind it. But we have seen other years where it's been competitive. But now, like I said, the profile of rallying, I don't think it's just a criticism of the BRC, but the profile in rallying has slipped in the UK, and we just don't see any commercial sponsorship in there. Let's hope that maybe the likes of the closed road rallies that we saw for the first time in England a few weeks ago will help to attract more sponsors back in, because we don't see very many at the minute.
Last one on this one. Are we in the realms of the jump from R2 to R5 is just too great a jump?
No, I don't think so, because as you know, even from your R2 car with the 1600 engine or now the 1 litre turbo engine, they're a proper little car to drive. You know, you've got a sequential gearbox, you can left upgrade the cars, you can drive them hard, you can drive them properly. Whereas if you look back at the one make championship cars over the years, they never had a dog box, let alone a sequential gearbox. So there was always a big jump. Whereas now I think if you go from an R2 car, it's a proper rally car, and moving from R2 to R5 is quite a natural jump.
Now, from I take that on board from a driving point of view, but from a budget point of view, we almost need an island in the middle. You know, yeah. Metaphorically speaking, we need an island to go from R2. Whether it would be R3, let's not even talk about R4. Jesus, that's a well-trodden ground. That's never, ever going to happen. But it does feel like there's a stepping stone missing to help get somebody to R5. I just think it's just too big a jump. I think that's the problem.
Yeah, I think you're right. And again, we've touched on this one before many, many times, that you've lost the cheap, cost-effective Group N cars, Group N four-wheel drive cars that you could go out and get a relatively good result for relatively little money in comparison. And now there is a huge jump in budget from R2 to R5. You're quite right. But it doesn't look like we're very close to seeing any stepping stone whatsoever in terms of homologated cars. So the only thing we can do if we want championships to thrive is make sure they have a profile that attracts sponsorship into them.
I have to say, I watched the program from the Pirelli on TV the other day. Fantastic program. Really, really well done. Obviously, I know it's a new team. Well, it's an old team, but it's a new team that I've come back to take over the coverage as well. And I really, really enjoyed the coverage, and I thought everybody came across well. I thought they were inventive of how they did things. They did some different things and some, you know, similar things, because you can only change it so much. And I actually really enjoyed watching the program, and hopefully that will transcend, you know, to other people who are watching the TV program as well. Anyway, we're rushing headlong, Ryan Champion. Now we're at any other business, believe it or not, we're already there. Do you have any other business this week?
I have a couple of things. You've already mentioned Gaurav Gill joining WRC2 or as a class, if not registering with the MRF Fiesta. We've also seen confirmation now that Kaito Kaitanovic is going to start his program, I think, in Sardinia, again with an M Sport Fiesta, but run by M Sport Poland, as he has been in the past. So, you know, there's certainly a lot happening around WRC2. Another thing this weekend is it's the Rally Festival Transmira. Somebody will tell me I've pronounced it completely wrong.
for once, it's you, not me.
what is exciting there is Nicky Grist has taken his newly bought Celica, and he's put UR Kankin in it for the weekend. So,
as you do.
I see they're having a nice round of golf at the Sevi Ballesteros course the other day before they went wrecking, and I'm sure they'll have a lovely time, and it'll be great to see UR Kankin and Nicky Grist back in his Celica.
And Jimmy McRae's there as well. Jimmy McRae's out there in the Sierra Cosworth, the 4x4 one. So that'll be the old guard again. Now, Ryan Champion, we had Dean Herrick on last week, who was talking Subarus, and he's planted the seed, and you're going to love this. We've spoke off and on about doing an F2 program. The F2 program, the wheels are already turning on that one, folks. You'll be pleased to know. I just can't tell you when it'll be done, and it won't be one program. I can tell you that for nothing already. But I'm really, really thinking about doing a Group A program or Group A feature.
Yeah. Sounds like a good idea to me.
And I've got a couple of people lined up from the Escort days. We know some bloke with a Subaru. I'm sure we can tap into him. I'm on it. What do you think? Do you think the people would want it? A Group A special?
I think it's definitely got legs, that one. I do.
All right, there you go. That's what we're going to do. Listen, my any other business, by the way, we did the Speed and Rally show last weekend. We did some big skids and we had loads of people down, and we had so many people. I think when I say so many people, it sounds like hundreds. It wasn't. I had 5, 6, 7 people come up and talk to me about the podcast, and it was very, very flattering. And I really, really do appreciate you. You have no idea how much that helps when people come and talk to us and, say nice things about the stuff that we do and the stuff that we say. And even some people who disagree with us, I don't mind that at all, because again, as I always say, we're just kind of, yeah, we've all kind of grown up with it and we've all been involved with it. But again, we offer opinions, and you know, we're always prepared to listen to other people's opinions. We don't preach. We just have a chat. And you know what, right? It was so nice. We had a lot of people come up to us, say some nice things about the program. And then I went out and did some big skids and I took some people out, and it was great fun. And it's always, I'm sure you can relate to this, it's always good fun when you leave it in gravel spec on very, very soft old gravel tires.
It definitely is. Yeah. Exactly how I took the Subaru to rally there last year.
Yeah. So there you go. So all the people who came up, thank you so much. It did mean a lot. And what was really nice is that there's a whole generation, right, that didn't know where the DNA of Absolute Rally came from. They've just picked up from the Absolute Rally. They didn't even know that Total Rally existed, which is weird. And then I had other people coming up saying that they've downloaded it since 2010, which was Total Rally as well. So it's weird, the generation thing. I had one guy come up to me, must have been early 20s. He was saying, I've only ever listened to Absolute Rally. I didn't know there was anything before it. I said, yeah, it's all there if you go and seek it out. And then I had another guy come up to me, I think Mark Brotherhood, who's been listening for years, and he's been listening to it from day one. So there's a generation gap now as well. It's weird. I feel old, right? I feel old. So anyway, there you go. Right, we'll be back. Obviously it's Portugal next week, so we'll do a little bit of a preview. Obviously Gus has been talking to us about us there. We're going to also have, we're going to have Matt Edwards join us. Unfortunately, he did join us this week, but we had some issues with the recording. I just don't think the recording did it justice. So we're going to bring him back next week anyway, which is why I've made reference to him already, because, as I say, we did record something, but it wasn't great. But, right, you're back with us next week, aren't you?
I am. Yep. Happy day.
Happy days. Folks, we're going to go to a break. We're going to come back with a piece, as I say, with Gary Boyd, who's been talking to Hayden Padner. We've already mentioned this section, who was out last weekend in his AP4 car. And then after that, we're going to come back with the one and only Ken Block's co-driver, who, again, former friend of the show. He hasn't been on for a little while, but he's doing some coaching and stuff, and with his wife, Rianne, and Alex Yelsimo. And so, sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast. And Ryan and I will be back at the end with Gus Greensmith.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast with Tony Simpson, Jack Bennion, and Ryan Champion. Listen to more episodes via absoluterally.co.uk. Follow us on Twitter at @absolute_rally. Become part of the community at facebook.com/absoluterally. And if you like what you hear, help us make more episodes. Become a patron at patreon.com/absoluterally. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Hayden and obviously what Ryan and I were talking about at the top of the programme. But as I mentioned, we've been doing a little bit of coaching, of course, with Trevor Agnew. And of course, Trevor was a co-driver. But you'll find that obviously the coaching bits and pieces we did with Trevor was very much open-ended. But following on from that, I wanted to do something a bit more kind of, I suppose, co-driver focused as well, and friend of the show, as we've just been talking about off air, he hasn't been on for a couple of years, but he's still a dear friend of the show. Alex Gelsimo, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hello, Tony. Thanks for having me, and hello to everyone from Absolute Rally.
It's great to have you back now. You and your dear wife, obviously very experienced co-drivers, and I've been watching what you do on social media and things like that, and you've got the Oz Rally Pro, which is an advanced rally training program. This is very much focusing towards people, perhaps, who haven't got that access to, I suppose, to European experience, because we take a lot for granted over here in Europe with regards to rallying, and you've kind of took, I suppose, the European experiences that you've gained and took it out to the States and back out to Oz as well, and really started working with people with regards to pace notes and things like that.
Yeah, that's a great way to actually explain it, Tony. And something that we figured out about 3 or 4 years ago, that there was a bit of need here in North America as far as, you know, pace note coaching, but also strictly, you know, co-driver coaching and training. And so we started doing one-to-one tuitions, you know, to drivers and co-drivers on that specific area of the pace noting and the job of the co-driver randomly. You know, it was mostly an idea to fill dates in our calendar where we didn't have many rallies. But obviously the business and the interest from competitors has grown over the past 3-4 years, and we just went over our numbers, and we coached our 105th competitor just a few days ago, and just 37 for the ZL alone, you know, and it's been quite busy, so it's no more a side job that is filling our calendars when we don't have events, but it's also is becoming quite a commitment. Yeah,
it's something which, funny enough, I know you're very friendly with my old he's still my co-driver Ian, but he is old, Ian Bevan, from a Welshman who competes over in the States. And I know back then they were kind of doing kind of coaching workshops, and I know Craig Drew, of course, sits with David Higgins, is kind of done stuff like that. And is the fact that rallying now is becoming a bit more popular again in the States, is it got a new following that's been gained? Is that why we're getting new co-drivers that need this help?
Well, what's happening actually in North America, in the States in particular, is that there has been actually another championship that has been added to the calendar, which is the ARA, American Rallying Association, which goes and complements sort of like the Rally American and NASA Rally Sport Championship. So we actually have three national championships, and that has created more events. So we are at a stage right now in US that there is a lot of rallies, which is obviously covering more areas of the country, and is bringing more people interest into the sport. So people are going to spectate, then they're evolving into marshals, and from marshals they're turning into competitors, you know, either building cars or becoming co-drivers. So this bit of a confusion that has been going on as far as all those championships go in North America has been, in my opinion, positive, because it has created more events and has created more competitors. So it's been there's been quite a request, you know, for new competitors, and there is a lot of new competitors right now to find a bit of knowledge, you know, and understanding the sport and be, you know, brought up to speed as quickly as possible. And that's the service that we're providing.
The experience levels, though, you know, I've got to ask about this as well. You know, how Have we had anybody that hasn't done an event that's come to you yet? Have you had somebody at Ground Zero? Have you had somebody that's done nothing? Is it gone back that far?
We have had a handful of competitors over the past 12 or 24 months that are currently, they are building or were in the process of building rally cars. And when they came to train with us, they had done no events at all. So they were pretty green. But also we have worked with competitors that have had up to 80 rallies in their CVs. So we sort of cater all sort of experiences, up to 80, 100 rallies, and especially competitors that don't have the international experience. It's been actually one of the fun parts for Rhiannon and I to be able to work with a variety of competitors with all sort of experiences as well.
Which is great to hear. Now, I've also noticed that you've been back in a rally car recently, which has been good. And a quite a famous rally car. And we spoke about on the program last week, Alex. I think it was the week before. We're massive. We're rally geeks on this program. I'm sure you know. Ryan Champion, of course, my co-host, has got an X-Wake Subaru. Jack Benyon is possibly one of the biggest anoraks. I'm convinced he's a lot older than what he tells us. But we got giddy. We got excited because there was an Escort Cosworth. And I said it was possibly one of the biggest strokes of genius that your regular driver, Mr. Block, had done for many, many years, and all the things he's done, and I'm sure they're all very, very successful. For me to see an Escort Cosworth come back was possibly one of the best things I think he's ever done.
Yeah, obviously. Well, this was a conversation that started between Ken, myself, and Derek Dons, the RTM manager, I would say probably 12 or 18 months ago. And, you know, Ken was, showing interest in coming back to stage rallying, and he wanted to get sort of like into a classic car. And so I think we mentioned back there, oh, perfect, we'll build a Mark II Escort, you know, with a full open spec and everything. And he said, I really enjoy four-wheel drive. So, okay, what do you build as a classic Ford that is four-wheel drive? So it's either going to be an old Group B car or something in the Group A early WRC era. So the plan, the project was presented to Ken, and he got really excited and started seeing pictures and videos from the 90s. So that was the target of the project. Sourcing, obviously, those cars is not as easy as some other cars from the Group A area. The search started, and finally the car was found, I would say, probably about 8 or 10 months ago in Europe. It was purchased, converted to left-hand drive, and brought back in the U.S. And obviously, we know that Ken, when it comes to marketing and making publicity of his ideas, of his projects, is leader in motorsports. So it's been quite a bit of coverage since the car was introduced first earlier in the year, then the new livery was launched. And from my understanding, the car will be used in some of the Gymkhana videos as well. But the great thing is that we already done two, three tests in the forest and one rally, the first round of the ARA championship. So that has been exciting to be in a car like that. It's a car that growing up, I remember the Sierra two doors, and the four door Sierras in Group A and Group A, they were the popular cars. And back then, at that time, I was starting with small two wheel drive cars, Opels and Peugeots in the regional championships in Italy, and those cars for me were sort of like a dream, and then we knew that one day I was gonna race in one of those, but like when they were already classic cars. So that's a bit of a crazy story, but it's a very exciting car, and we've done one event, and when we're starting to understand the car a little bit more, because it's very different from anything that Ken has driven in the past few years, and also from anything that I co-driven in the past few years.
I was just going to say, well, Derek, of course, will have worked with them when he was very, very young, if memory serves, when he worked for RED over here in the UK. So I'm pretty certain that of all the people you probably could have got to head up the program, and there's probably not many better who could have done it for you.
Absolutely, yeah. He's got the knowledge. It, like you said, when he worked back at RED, which is scary because Derek is getting up in age. But it was, you know, it was a while ago, wasn't it?
It was a long, long time ago, and that saved Derek's blushes because we are hoping to have him on very, very soon. Anyway, but there you go. And now, fast forward on. Of course, the program that Ken is doing is announced. You're going to be back in one of these fire breathing spitting. 2017, we still call them a 2017, but of course it will be 2018, but the 2017 specification World Rally Cars. Have you been anywhere near one yet, Alex?
Only as a spectator, yeah. I know that Ken has driven one recently. I don't know under what circumstances and for, you know, what venue, but I have only seen him in action when I spectated in Wales last year and WRC Australia. So I'm very excited about that, but I know that there is going to be a lot of homework that needs to be done, and I've already prepared some pace notes from our last outings that we did a few years ago in WRC, from WRC Mexico and other events like that. And I'm going to watch some onboards from WRC Plus with our pace notes from a few years ago, which were when we ran the normal World Rally Car Fiesta. So I think that will be my first step into getting to understand sort of like the speed of these cars. And Ken and I have spoken, and we're gonna do our best to have a good comprehensive test prior to the event, which obviously, being Spain, is an event that features, you know, both tarmac and gravel. But maybe that was the attraction, and maybe that was the reason why that event was chosen, because, you know, it gives the possibility to Ken to drive the car on both surfaces, and it's usually a great event, you know, pleasant weather and everything. So hopefully we get to do enough tests and we get to understand the car, which, from what I see, the level is much higher than anything we dreamed in the past. But, you know, we'll definitely do our best.
It will give you a bit of a shock. I was talking to Phil Mills the other week in a project that he and I have been working on, completely unrelated to this, but I asked him about what it was like just to be back in a car, because he sat in with Elvin as a one-off on Corsica, because Dan was unfortunately injured the course in that off that they'd had on the event before, and he said it was just mind-blowing. You know, it was just mind-blowing just how quick these things are. So you've got a treat in store for you, Alex. You've got a treat in store for you. But listen, before we get to that, just, you know, we'll share around the bits and pieces that you do with regards to the co-driver school. Are you expanding this, you know, now outside? Obviously, you know, we know home for you guys now is America. Obviously, you know, we know Rianne's course from Australia, and I know you've run some workshops over there. Have you got plans to roll this out in other parts of the world, or are you going to get people coming to you? How's this going to work for you?
Both ideas are on the table. Obviously, last year we were hired by the New Zealand Motorsport, you know, the New Zealand Rally Championship, to run a course there. So we were there for a week, and then we trained 6 up-and-coming co-drivers. And there is possibly an opportunity to do that again in the future. We're currently in talks with them. You know, we've done a lot of training in Australia. We recently had a team coming from Barbados to come here and see us in Idaho, which is quite a trip. In order for us to do the training that we do, we need to be close to some good proper stages. So that means that we have our home event here, the Idaho Rally, where the stages are only a handful of miles from our house. So we use those roads. I actually have a team of co-driver that are going to start in about 45 minutes here, you know, and we're going to head to the stages, and we're going to train them there. Then we can go to other locations as long as we have some proper stages we can use, because, you know, if the roads are good, we can challenge our students, we can push them to the next level, both drivers in pace noting and co-drivers. So that's one of the requirements we have. We have spoke to some people in Canada, and some Canadian competitors have come here. Obviously, New Zealand, Australia, we already done that. There has been some interest from Spain and the UK. However, we need to still sort some plans. Now the year gets busy as far as being in the rally car for Rhiannon and I. So things are going to slow down a little bit as far as the training goes, because we're just going to be busy at rallies. But then I'm sure they'll we'll be able to book other competitors. And yeah, we're pretty open to travel anywhere, and we have already. We like to do it here in our hometown of Boise, Idaho, because we got the roads, but we keep our possibilities open all the time.
How can people check out what you're doing? What's the best way of reaching out to you guys?
Well, obviously, thanks to the marvelous social media, we actually don't have a webpage. You know, we just rely our publicity and our contacts all through social media, which is Instagram and then Facebook and Twitter. It's Oz Rally Pro, and so it's pretty easy to find us, or even to Google us. You know, you just Google Oz Rally Pro, sends you to our social media, and the email that we can reach for any inquiries is ozrallypro@gmail.com. So that's an easy way, and the word of mouth between competitors has been our best advertisement. People come and train with us, and they leave really happy, and they leave you know, having learned quite a bit and increasing their knowledge, and then they speak to other competitors, and then they contact us and book, you know, for the training. As you know, the world of rallying is really, really small, even, you know, if it's worldwide, the sport, you know, but it's a very tight world, and everybody knows everything. So our reputation has been quite good, and it's created, generated more business for us.
Fantastic. Listen, Alex, I do thank you so much for joining us. Funnily enough, coming up in the next section is one of your old drivers. We've got Gus Greensmith, who's going to be joining us. So it's a very small world, as you say. That just kind of adds to the what you've just been saying there. But we would love to get you back on again soon. Would you come back again in the next few months, Alex?
Absolutely, absolutely. And please say hello to Gus. It's funny that we work together for a full season, but it's funny how things go. We seem to be closer now, even if, you know, we haven't seen each other since Wales. We seem to be closer now. We message quite a bit now than we were back when we were working together. And it's been great to see Gus, you know, collecting a couple of podiums on the last couple of events. Please say hi to him, and I'll be looking forward to speak to you guys again and to listen to the shows again.
Fantastic. Right. Alex, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll welcome back soon on Absolute Rally.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks, guys. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Get connected with Absolute Rally. Check out the website at absoluterally.co.uk. Find us on Facebook, Absolute Rally. Follow us on Twitter at @absolute_rally. This is the Absolute Rally podcast.
Hayden, thank you for taking time out of a busy schedule to catch up with us for a chat for the Absolute Rally podcast. Where exactly are you at the moment, and what have you got on for the rest of the day?
Well, leaving the country, actually. So just finishing up a little week stint in New Zealand and getting back to Europe now, and obviously continue what we're doing in the WRC over there. So, long plane ride, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. And that time in New Zealand, how have you been able to put that to use in a way that might help you getting back to WRC?
Yeah, well, obviously we had quite a big gap between our WRC commitment, so it was important that we, one, keep busy, and two, tried to be doing some driving. You know, spending 3 months in a rally car is enough time to go rusty, so we're able to do a couple of rallies here in New Zealand. Been kept very busy helping run and manage our New Zealand team here as well, along with a few other projects. So 11 weeks is somewhat disappeared quite quickly, and ready and prepared for Portugal.
Clean sweep of stage wins on both the New Zealand Rally Championship events that you've done, but in between times you had to change a co-driver. Can you just tell us, how did that go work out?
Yeah, unfortunately, probably fortunately for Joel, actually, he finally got a replacement done after Otago Rally. Something he's been waiting on for a few years now, so he jumped at the opportunity, obviously, and it just meant he couldn't be in the car for last weekend's Whangarei Rally, so gave an opportunity for someone else to be in the car, and we wanted another Kiwi to be in the car with for that, so Mel Pedden jumped at the opportunity. It worked really well. Obviously, he got chucked in the deep end, working with us at maybe a little bit of a higher speed than what he used to, more detail in the pace notes, but I think he adapted quite well, and we grew together over the weekend, and you know, I was really happy with the job he did.
Now, for those who aren't aware, you basically put out in New Zealand a Facebook request and some other local channels asking who could be available. How many people did you get applying, and how difficult was it to make that choice of Malcolm Peden?
Yeah, well, I probably opened a bit of a can of worms. You know, we put that note out there thinking, because obviously mid season most co-drivers are probably committed, so we weren't sure if it was actually available, so we thought we'd do it the other way around and see who was available. But yeah, we had hundreds of emails from all around the world, and obviously our focus was trying to find a Kiwi, so that narrowed it down a lot. And then, yeah, obviously it was always going to be tough to make a decision, but you know, Mel come highly recommended. He'd obviously gone through the New Zealand Co-Driver Academy, and you know, he's someone that we thought had a good enough experience, but also was driven to make something of his career.
Right. Something a lot of people may not know is Malcolm was the co-driver for Alex Kilsey in that fabulous Peugeot-powered MC2 machine a few years ago.
Yeah, Mel sat in a few cars before, and he commented over the weekend that the Hyundai is a lot more comfortable and maybe a lot more quiet on the road section, so I think he quite enjoys that.
Fair enough. Now, you're going back into 3 back-to-back WRC rounds, Portugal next up, followed by Sardinia. Before you get on to Finland, you're going to be back in New Zealand for an event. You're then doing Rally Estonia. It's a pretty busy few months ahead.
Yeah, well, considering we're in May now, we've only done 3 of our rallies, but we've got another 12 ahead for the rest of the year until November. So now our year starts getting really busy with a lot of regular rallies, and that, you know, it's what I need to be in the seat more regularly. So yeah, I'm quite excited about that. As I say, I'm feeling pretty good for the season ahead. And yeah, just got to make it and join with us now on the rallies and try and put together some good results.
So how is that mindset heading back up to Europe this year?
Oh, really good. You know, I feel a lot more like my old self from a couple of years ago now. You know, I think this time at home has been quite good. Sort of not trying to focus much on WRC at all and just focus on myself again a little bit. And, you know, even this time at home, it's the longest period of time I've been at home for 5 or 6 years. So, you know, it's just refreshing when you start, you know, you see your friends and family a lot more often and all the things that you miss when you're competing and living on the other side of the world away from what you've grown up around. You know, I guess it becomes a little draining over time, I guess.
Yeah. I've certainly heard a few comments at the Rally Whangarei around the service park, around the media centre. You were looking your old self. It's the real Hayden that we know is back again, ready to fight.
Yeah, well, I'm enjoying it again. That's probably the biggest factor, you know. It's like anything you do in life, whether it be rally, sport or business, you've got to enjoy it to get the most out of it. And I'm enjoying driving again. I'm enjoying working with people and teams. And, I'm actually looking forward to going back and getting back in the car again over there. So I think that's a massive step on its own, and we just got to let the results naturally progress from there.
Will you be testing before all of the WRC rounds?
We've got a 2-day test later this week in Sardinia, so it crosses as our Portugal and Sardinia test. And I think it's good that the team's given us 2 days in the car to sort of get back in the group at the end of the year.
Being named for manufacturer to contest the manufacturer points in Portugal, is that important to you personally?
To be honest, it's not something I focus on. Whether you're nominated for manufacturer points or not, the target's still the same. It's still to go out there and get the best job that you possibly can. And we're going to drive our own rally. We're going to be pushing, but without obviously doing an interview at the same time. But you know, if conditions are good, we'll have a good road position, and we've got to be smart and actually make sure we utilise that road position advantage. And I think we can do that without having to overdrive or take unnecessary risks. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. See how it pans out, and drive it ahead.
Do you have a series of targets for the remaining events this year already, or will it be event by event?
I think when you're on a limited program like we are, that sort of focused on our stronger events, if you like. I think the targets have got to be podium. It's pretty hard in this day and age because it's so close to everyone, but you know, I believe it's something that's quite achievable for us. For sure, there's going to be circumstances that's going to mean that we're not going to probably do that on all 6 rallies, but you certainly want to try and do it on as many of them as we can.
Looking back 12 months ago, going into Portugal was your first event with Seb Marshall. 12 months on, looking forward to getting back and working with Seb again.
Oh, definitely. Like Seb and I are good mates, and we've been in touch quite often and giving each other a bit of a hard time when we can. So yeah, it'll be good to catch up with him again and get back in the car together. Portugal is a rally I've always enjoyed, but for some reason we haven't really been able to get a result there in the last couple of years. So it was going well last year. We just took the lead of the rally until we had a technical problem that stopped the car. So if we can pick up from that again and try and hopefully have the car hold in one piece, then maybe we can continue that.
Okay, look, I'm very conscious of your time, Hayden, and I see the time is ticking by, so just like to wish you and Seb, the rest of the Hyundai team, every success in Portugal and for the remainder of the season.
Great, thanks so much, Gary.
Cheers, Hayden, mate.
You're listening to the Absolute Rally Podcast, bringing you the biggest guests, the latest news, and in-depth analysis of all the goings-on from across the world of rally. Help us make more episodes. Become a patron at patreon.com/absoluterally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. It's obviously me and Raya still here. Jack Benyon's still missing an action, but we've got a third party. We've got somebody else who's joined us, friend of the show, of course, Gus Greensmith. Welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much.
We've been trying to get you. Obviously, after that the heady second place on Rally Argentina, I thought you were snubbing us, to be honest with you, mate.
No, I wouldn't do that. I'd never do that.
Of course you wouldn't. Listen, I've asked you loads about this stuff, and I know Ryan's going to ask you about some stuff in a minute, but I'm going to ask you a dead easy question. Are the reins off now? You've done as you were told on those two long haul events.
Yeah, I'd say so now. The plan was just to make sure we got, well, the plan was podium finishes in both Mexico and Argentina, and we'd do nothing stupid there. So I've done exactly as I was told. Argentina, I went and drove quite a bit quicker than I did in Mexico, just because I need to start getting the feeling back for when I start pushing again, trying to fight for some top positions. But and the pace on the Saturday when we were giving it a little bit more was better. So we were pretty close to the Skodas, who were having a fairly massive battle, and that was fairly intense watching them two go at it, because none of them two wanted to give up. So yeah, the speed was good on the Saturday when we were just kind of giving it a little bit more of some. So yeah, we'll go to Portugal, we'll give it quite a bit more of a go, and we'll see where it goes.
Good stuff. Bri, I know you're a man who would love to be in an R5, as we all would, but I'm sure you've got plenty of stuff you'd like to ask Mr. Greensmith about.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, doing the two flyaway rallies, that must have been, albeit you very much had a plan and you've been very methodical in your approach to them, but it must have been an amazing experience to do those two long-haul rallies.
Yeah, definitely. It was, when you see the European events, you know that rallying is like quite a big sport, but then when you go to the long-haul events, it's on a different level. Like, I've never been dragged and pulled around for pictures and autographs before in my life, but I was in Mexico and Argentina, and I can guarantee 99% of them had no idea who I was. But it doesn't matter, because for 15 seconds of the day walking from the service park to the hotel, I was mobbed. So it was quite fun, but then again, I thought, no, I'll get to the hotel rather quickly now, because you didn't know what was happening. But no, it is fun, and it is incredible. And driving up El Condor, albeit with rear-wheel drive, was still insane. It actually gave me more time to look at the fans, and the amount that were there was just insane.
Yeah, Argentina, an incredible place and passionate crowd. You just touched on it there. You had sort of a ringside seat to see the battle between the two Skodas. There's definitely no love loss, is there, between Tiedemann and Robin Paar already?
No, I don't think them two are going to get on too well. I think Pontus controlled the first day pretty well, and then after we had the problems on Friday, they were just told to hold station and get a good 1-2 for Skoda. And the young gun decided that he wasn't going to do that. So Pontus allowed him to catch up, and then all of a sudden they were going on the door handles, and then you all saw what happened. So, yeah, it was inevitable, really.
Yeah, I mean, quite a spectacular accident. But they are going on some pace. I mean, obviously, you're going back to events that you're a bit more familiar with now. How do you feel about the pace that they're on?
Not so bad, to be fair, because on the, like, for example, one of the stages, the Los Gigantes had been shortened, very, very fast stage, incredibly quick, really strong Skoda stage, and I think we were less than 4 seconds behind them. We were pushing, like, it was a good 90%, but it certainly was not even anything close to any risks or or anything like that. So for me, the pace was fine. I was quite happy with it. I was doing what I was told. And Portugal is a rally I know really well. And I wouldn't be going there pushing if I didn't feel I could close the gap.
Yeah, and good to hear. And I mean, like you said, you know Portugal well. You've been in the World Championship now, what, sort of 3 years in and around the World Championship. Do you sort of feel like you belong in the service park now?
Yeah, it's definitely my second home now, I'd say. It feels weird if I'm not on a plane going to a rally within like 2, max 3 weeks. So I would definitely class it as my second home, and it's just a nice place to be. I couldn't imagine. It's got to the point now where I speak to people around the paddock and they always say they couldn't imagine life without going, like being at a rally, which is fair enough because they've been there for 20 years. I've only been in it for, I don't know, 3. And to me, I couldn't imagine any way of life without the service park now.
Yeah, like you say, a lot of the drivers around you have been there a significant length of time, even the likes of Chris Meek, Andreas Mikkelsen, etc. Who is good fun around the service park? Who's good fun on the recce? Who's the troublemaker? Who's always having a laugh and a joke?
I won't talk about the recce itself, about what happens on the recce, because that would be incriminating. But there's to be fair, Elfin's good fun. Timu's always good fun. So Seb's all right, but them two generally a bit more fun and a bit more talkative on the recce, and always talking to Dan's good, talking from someone up north, always good fun. So generally everyone's usually well behaved, as I've been told to say, and I won't be saying anything else on the matter.
Now, are you taking it very much event by event as it goes at the minute, or do you sort of have a plan already in place for the rest of the year?
We had a plan for the first 4 events, and then we'd get to the 4th event and we'd see where we're at, and then we'd adjust the remainder of the year according to how well it was going. So 2 more events to go yet before we have a quick review of this, how the season's gone, and then we'll plan ahead. But everything's going to plan so far, and let's hope it stays that way.
Now, something we talked about on the programme recently is in terms of coaching. We've had Trevor Agnew on, who's studied a lot of coaching. You've obviously got Christian Solberg alongside you, helping you through learning the ropes, really, of WRC. What does Christian bring to you on a rally?
He brings a lot, mainly experience. He's done the rallies before, he's made the mistakes, and he's also done some good performances. So he can tell you what and what not to do, which is very handy. He's incredibly valuable for the people he knows around the paddock as well. Half the people I've been able to speak to about opportunities would never have happened without Christian. So he's massively important to my career, and we're very good friends as well. So it makes sense that we keep working together.
You've got that kind of there's always, I must admit, it does make me smile when I go on WRC rounds and you look at like the guys who are backed by the FFSA and things like that, and there's always like this kind of huddle of people around them. Obviously you're not kind of in that realm, but you've got your own people. Obviously I know your dad normally goes on the events with, obviously Christian's there, you and Craig now have got that long term kind of, does it feel like, you know, does that familiarity, does that work for you, Gus? Is it good having this exact same people just around you who kind of keep you, I suppose, a little bit grounded in some ways as well?
Oh yeah, my dad keeps me grounded. If he ever sees my feet even slightly raised, there's an iron fist and generally a cricket bat coming my way. But no, generally it's pretty good. And like you said about the FFSA, our MSA seems to do the square root of 0. So yeah, it's good to have a good set of people around you that want to push you forward. But obviously help from our governing body would always be appreciated, but there never seems to be any. Or when it is, it's in the wrong place. So that's a shame. But no, I have a good set of people around me, and obviously always looking to improve. So generally adding people, changing people, it seems to be a constant work in progress. But the close bunch, like the 4 of us, seems to work really well.
Now, again, we're getting further down the line with the R5 car now. The R5 car is continually, you know, being developed. It's now home. Obviously, I don't know how many, we did something with Matt Edwards, funnily enough, who's obviously using the M Sport R5 car, in BRC. He's going to be joining us on next week's program, but he was talking about, you know, doing 100 kilometer test before he did Pirelli rally, which blew his mind. He said he's never done 100Ks of testing in his life. Now, you've just said to us, obviously, you're getting ready for Portugal. What kind of mileage will you be doing pre-Portugal?
I'm a lucky boy. I get 300 kilometres before Portugal, which is the most I've ever done before a rally, which I hope and should make a big difference, especially against the Skoda drivers who get minimum, I would say, 300 kilometres before each rally. We're kind of moving into them realms now, which is going to make, I think, a big difference, because there's two distinct gravel types in Portugal, and I'm going to be able to test on both of them. Weather permitting, that could be incredibly useful. And like I said, I've never had this opportunity before, so I'm going to absolutely make the most of it and then try and wring the neck out of the car and bring the best result home possible.
You did Portugal in the R5 last year, didn't you, mate?
Yeah.
So I suppose that's the other thing now. Last year was year one, wasn't it, of course, in the R5 car. Now we're in year two. It must be quite exciting now going back to events that you've already done. Because obviously last year, I remember you were on last year and you were talking about, you know, obviously you had a set of notes, but those notes were for an R2 car. And all of a sudden you're in an R5 car and almost those notes go out the window. Now we're going back to events with notes that were written originally for an R5 car.
Yeah, no, all the notes have been checked. Everything works really well, and the speed last year was really good. We were fighting, every stage was right up there, so I can't see why we can't be a little, if we're not a little bit better this year, then I'm doing something wrong. So for me, we had a small upgrade on the car in Argentina, which made a good difference. So everything I need to do the job is in place, and now it's just down to me. Without putting any pressure on myself, I'm only going to go and have some fun, but everything I need or ever could want, I've got for this rally, so I just need to go there, do the job.
Happy days. Listen, Gus, it's always a pleasure to have you on, mate, and we will catch up with you after Portugal at some point. Can I just one last thing before I let you go? Obviously, are you doing, have you got anything else planned? If for instance, you know, you get to your fourth event, will there be any other events out there too? Is there anything you fancy? Is there anything kind of catching your eye? Maybe a cheeky visit to the British Isles or around the British Rally Championship. Would that happen, do you think?
Oh, everything that we can put in and that M-Sport can go in is going just to go into the WRC. But if the opportunity arises to do something else, I'd never say no. It's any time in a car is good and I can learn something from it. So I'm open to anything. If someone offers me something, then I'll be there to do it for sure.
Ryan Champion's Evo's on its way to Barbados. Just saying.
I'm jealous.
There you go. You go to those places, Gus, when you're our age. That's pretty much the rule.
I plan to drink the bottle of vodka before the rally when I get to that age and then do the rally. This is the days before, not 10 minutes before, by the way.
Good man. Listen, mate, we will catch up with you soon. Folks, thank you so much for the download. We'll be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.